hour number two here on Next Man Up, 102.5 The Game. Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly, Brandon Bigsby, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Parker, we were having a pretty good conversation about just college football as a whole, going into the college football playoff. Just, again, I don't think the Big 12 is a two-bid league this year. Looking at the ACC, I think that's where it opens up to more of the two bids for the ACC purposes. I think there's more quality in that conference. The strength of schedule is a little bit more, I guess, competitive for more teams in the ACC. It's just for the Big 12, in my opinion, sure, BYU and Texas Tech have been great this year. I think the Big 12 is playing on a different weight of a scale, if that makes sense. For me, if I'm a college football playoff committee member, the Big 12 has to either have one loss or be undefeated to be, you know, in contention for a spot in the top 12. And if that is the case with BYU and Texas Tech both having one losses, in this scenario it doesn't work because Texas Tech has the head-to-head win over BYU.
I believe this is where we start heading down the road towards a world, and this is especially going to be the case next year because you have the SEC playing 9 conference games, and they're just going to beat up on each other because in that deal, they also have to play one Power 4 opponent in the non-con. So they're going to be playing 10 games against conference opponents. So there's this lie out there in college football that you are what your record says you are. You may have a 9-3 SEC team, and if you're just looking at the record, you see 9-3, and you don't think playoff contender. Well, also look at the schedule, and that's why the SEC did move to 9 conference games, because the playoff said, okay, we're going to factor in strength of schedule. That is the only reason why they did that. So there may be a world in which you have an 11-1 Big 12 team versus a 9-3 SEC team, and the tiebreaker actually goes to the SEC team based on strength of schedule. So we may see that this year. I don't know how things are going to play out. I'd be an idiot to try to predict because November is just complete and utter chaos. It has been my entire life. So if we do see an 11-1 BYU and they lose to Texas Tech this weekend and you have a 10-2 Vanderbilt, the tie may go to Vanderbilt.
It should, because they have more top 25 wins. Like you said, the strength of schedule is a lot more difficult for Vanderbilt. That is where I would draw the line, because, again, the Big 12 to me is not a true Power 4 contending conference because of those strength of schedules, the way they organize their schedules going into the season, that is. So that's where I'm at on that. Are there any other teams that you think could be a potential sneak into the top 12?
Absolutely. I'm not going to count out Miami just yet, just because their resume early on, they have not looked great as of recent, but I'm not going to count them out. I'm interested to see what happens with Utah, because looking at their remaining schedule, they're at Baylor, at Kansas State, and then they're at Kansas. 3 very winnable games for Utah. What do you do with the 10-2 Utah? Because they could also be alive in the Big 12. The Big 12 is a mess every year. Last year, 2 weeks to go in the regular season, there were 9 teams that were tied for first and could have played in the Big 12 championship game. Right now, I'd say the legitimate contender is BYU, Texas Tech, Cincy, Houston, Utah. They're all very much alive in this thing. So I'm interested to see what happens with the Utes as well.
Even though Utah has the head-to-head win over Cincinnati from this past weekend, and it was a convincing win at 45-14. I just don't see Utah in the mix. Just having 2 losses on your schedule, I get it. But out of those 2 losses, they were conference losses.
Right.
I think you have to take care of business in your conference. And those losses that you, I guess, lose have to come from your non-conference games.
Right, and that's really going to hurt them. That's going to hurt them in terms of Big 12 standings. Because if you have 2-1 loss, clearly you're not going to be in there. And if Utah doesn't play in the Big 12 championship game, there's not a shot in the world they're going to make it. So, but we're really starting to see this thing come together. I probably should have mentioned them first, but Louisville. Louisville has – they don't have the strength of schedule, but they have a win over Miami, which was pretty impressive. Their 1 loss was to number 12 Virginia. You're going to finish out with Cal, Clemson, SMU, Kentucky. And if you win those games, that's only going to – because they're ranked 14th right now. So if they win out and chaos happens in front of them, which is bound to happen, I mean, Texas and Oklahoma are both ahead of Louisville. So depending on how things shake out, Louisville is one of those teams that, if you're talking about a two-bit ACC, could potentially sneak in there as well.
Yeah, and again, let's say if there isn't a two-bit ACC league this year. Say it's just only one bid and it's Virginia, if they do win out and take care of business. But there is that conversation of, and you mentioned it a little bit ago, what if a Louisville finishes, you know, with one loss on the season, and or they finish with two losses or whatever it may be, and you go to the strength of schedule and you say Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt, obviously, out of all those teams that are fighting for a last spot, I think would have the best pathway to the playoff because of their strength of schedule. But is there one team out there that you say, wait a minute, I don't think Vandy gets in over XYZ team?
No, not really, because I think outside of the top 8, 9, there's a huge drop off in terms of what I think these teams are capable of. So it's really not going to surprise me when it comes down to that last at large spot. There are several teams that I could kind of cluster together that see have a realistic possibility. But to me, when I'm looking, that's what I believe NIL and transfer portal has created in terms of parity, where before that we were talking about Clemson, Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State winning it all. Then you have the outlier 2019 LSU team. But it was the same teams that we were talking about. Now with NIL and transfer portal, I don't think there are, you know, 12, 13, 14 teams capable of actually winning a national championship. But I do think there are eight. There are at least eight solid contenders.
Yeah, I feel like you're right. The NIL and transfer portal has opened up the cattle gates a little bit when it comes to just getting new faces and names into this playoff, because that's what everybody wants. They want to see a variety of good talent, not just the same over and over and over again. I mean, just sticking with the ACC, because earlier in the show and even up to now, you've made a really good case for possibly being a two-bid league or a one-bid league, whatever it may be. But there's just a lot of really good teams that – look, you make a great point about Miami, saying even though they have two losses and both of those are in the ACC, you got to look at their schedule. Obviously, their win over Florida State at the time, Florida State was ranked. They've kind of fallen off – South Florida and Florida State, both of them were ranked.
And technically Florida, which, you know, Florida, despite the record, their roster is still really good. So I think that'll still hold at least a little bit of weight. Now, it doesn't look good now, but at the time it looked pretty solid.
Yeah, and also to that point about Florida, if Miami ends up, you know, going on and only having two losses on the schedule – they need Florida to beat Tennessee coming up in the rest of the season, because at the time when they beat Florida, it was 26-7, a very interesting win for them. You look at Tennessee, who's kind of fallen off after their loss against Oklahoma this past weekend. You need them to lose to Florida, because that only strengthens your I guess, opportunity to go to the playoff in the roundabout way. And to that point as well, how do you discount the SMU loss if you're a committee member looking at it from Miami? Do you discount that at all? I mean, it was an overtime loss. Is there any factor into that?
I do, just because it's a loss. And I'm a guy that the regular season is the most important part of this deal to me. So I want to put as much emphasis on your regular season performance as possible. So if you lose, that's why with Notre Dame, like at they started the season 0-2. Now they have buzzsawed teams since that point, and I do believe Notre Dame is going to make the playoff, especially if they went out. But losses have to account for something, and the way in which they did it. The SMU, it went to overtime, but it didn't feel like Miami was going to win that game if you watched. I really thought SMU was in control for the most part. So it's definitely going to factor into it.
Yeah, and you mentioned Notre Dame, and obviously Miami beat Notre Dame at the beginning of the season 27-24. That, to me, I think kind of counteracts the SMU loss, like equals it out in a roundabout way. That is if Notre Dame wins out, because then that gives a pathway, in my case, gives a pathway for Miami to make it to the playoff, because the teams that they've lost to, I mean, obviously you lose to Louisville and you lose to SMU. Louisville is a top 15 team right now. You got to give a little factor into that, because they're a really good team in the ACC. So there's a pathway and a argument to be had for a lot of these teams. But again, back to the main point about Vanderbilt, I still don't think a lot of these teams can be leapfrogging Vanderbilt because of that. And unfortunately, and we'll get into this on the other side about Vanderbilt's case for the playoff and how much Texas had to do with that. All right, we'll do that here on Next Man Up, 102.5.
Back here on Next Man Up, 102.5 The Game, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly, Brandon Bigsby.
Hey, make sure to check out anything on our phone lines. If you hear something, you want to call in. It's sponsored by WilsonCountyHyundai.com or driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, however you look at it, right here on 102.5 The Game. Parker mentioning about just Vanderbilt's case for a college football playoff bid. It just, obviously, Heather Dennis does not have Vanderbilt in that top 12, but definitely, I think Vanderbilt has a true case because of strength of schedule. How much factors into that Texas loss?
I mean, obviously, it's pretty big because Vanderbilt looked really good in the second half, but before that, they were getting taken behind the woodshed. So, it's hilarious, Frazier, because you know me. You know I'm a Tennessee fan, and right. I have been called, and me and Jake both, we have both been called Vanderbilt homers, and I've been called Vanderbilt homers by my own friends, and it's crazy, but I've done the math. I've looked at this All-State playoff predictor. That's what I want to know from the callers, texters, whoever. Does a 10-2 Vanderbilt make the playoff? Because if you win in Knoxville and Neyland, one of the toughest places to play, and you win out, with the resume that you already have, I don't see a world in which Vanderbilt gets left out.
I mean,
10-2 SEC team with the strength of schedule that you have to play.
My only pushback, and obviously Alabama's a really good team. Texas, again, we really don't know what Texas is. I was listening to Robbie and Joe this morning, and they made a great point about Arch Manning. Just a lot of his yards Saturday were yak yards, yards after catch. And
the screens.
Yeah, yep. The screens were a big factor. And I don't know. That concerns me a little bit because Texas, they barely beat, you know, Kentucky in overtime. They barely beat Mississippi State in overtime. They handled, you know, Vanderbilt for the most part, took care of business in the first half. Like you said, Vanderbilt came back in the second half, really started to catch their stride. But I don't know. This Texas team, because they have the head-to-head win over Vanderbilt, and now they're ranked over Vanderbilt in the top 25, it just something smells and is a little fishy when it comes to possibly Texas getting in over Vanderbilt because of, you know, the SEC is the powerhouse conference of college football. It makes you wonder if they're the ones going to get in over Vanderbilt.
Well, here's how I think about it. I see what the AP has put out, and obviously the first playoff rankings come out on Tuesday, but they're at 15 right now. So we've talked about Oklahoma. We've talked about Texas. Both of those teams, I see a loss coming up on their schedule. So if they both lose and you have a two-loss Vanderbilt team versus a three-loss Texas and Oklahoma, I'd see Vanderbilt jumping them. And then you have Louisville and you have Virginia and the chaos that could play out in the ACC. That's why God created Saturdays and God lets us play the games, because we at that point we won't have to talk much about it. We'll just let the games speak for themselves. So I could see a case. Now, if Vanderbilt loses again, obviously this is all a mute point, but it's just hard for me to imagine a world in which a 10-2 SEC team gets left out of the playoff.
Yeah, I mean, again, it comes back to the Big 12 not being a strong conference because of strength of schedule. Look, if it's me, Vanderbilt's definitely in the playoff if they win out. Like, I don't know how else to tell you this.
Same with me.
But their strength of schedule, yes, they've lost two games, and that one was against, you know, a team in Texas that you kind of look at thinking, yeah, maybe they'll get in, maybe they won't. They're that fringe team. If Texas ends up losing, again, and we alluded to it last hour, but they'll more than likely, in my opinion, lose to A&M. That will for sure strengthen out, you know, Vandy's case. Again, Vandy has to take care of business. And we talked about this beforehand. Auburn, getting rid of Hugh Freeze. I wonder if that plays a little factor into the upcoming game against Vanderbilt because of that interim head coach bump. Obviously, it's their defensive coordinator that's taking over. But if that does play a factor into it, then that obviously hurts Vanderbilt. But Vanderbilt seems to be a team that knows how to bounce back from games like this.
Man, I'm so happy you brought up the Hugh Freeze firing, because Auburn is one of those teams, just like Florida, if you're looking at record, and clearly Auburn's record is not great, you wouldn't know the true story of this Auburn team, because Auburn has a five-star wide receiver on the outside in Cam Coleman. They had the number one overall receiver in the transfer portal. They have a pretty, solid offensive line. Their defense is pretty good. but they've really struggled with one. They've got hosed several times on penalties, or the Oklahoma game and the Georgia game. You could attribute officiating to why they lost the game ultimately, but play calling. That's what I wanted to hit on. Play calling with Hugh Freeze has been next to awful. And I'm going to get into the minutia real quick because I see Auburn running RPOs in which Jackson Arnold is turning his back and then throwing to where his back was facing. What sense does that make? And it ends up being picked off and at a pick six. That was the case in the Arkansas game. You should never turn your back to the guy you're going to ultimately throw the ball to the second you get your hips flipped around. It makes no sense. So I thought play calling under Hugh Freeze, he wasn't putting his guys in the best position. Now, I don't think Jackson Arnold's a good quarterback, but he still wasn't putting him in a good position to be successful. So whoever is taking over as play caller, if they're somewhat competent, you can do some things with Auburn down the stretch.
Absolutely. Let's get to our text line real quick. 6641 says Memphis would take 90% of the Big 12 to the woodshed. Would you agree to that? You think as a group of five team or that small bid into the top 12 that Memphis would take care of business in some aspects?
I think, well, Memphis beat Arkansas.
Right.
An SEC team. So I think Memphis could at least beat half of the Big 12. I don't know about all. I still think, what? I'm not doing math on air. There's 16 teams in the Big 12. 90% would be how many? 14? I don't think Memphis beats 90% of the Big 12.
Interesting. All right, next we have Nevada Josh, one of my favorite textures out here right now, because we agree on a lot of things, which is always great. If Vandy loses to UT, they're done. So sad for Tennessee football. Nobody's getting any playoff teams in. Vandy beating UT is our last hope. So for Vanderbilt fans, he's saying that is the last hope. He's right. I mean, no three-loss team is getting into this playoff.
No.
Unless some meteor hits, you know, the earth and says, wait a minute, oh,
we... Unless some serious chaos happens and we'll just get complete carnage for the month of November.
Exactly. Don't worry, Joey and Bovey, we'll get to that in a little bit, talking about Nashville SC. Michael in Madison says Texas still has to play both Georgia and A&M, which is what we made earlier.
They could be 8-4.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a real possibility.
So could Tennessee as well. And that makes me get to another point. If an 8-4 Tennessee, well, say at the time it would be 9-3, but say... Say a 9-3 Tennessee team, which is right now. Say they ended up, or maybe a 7-5 if they finish out that way.
That's in the cards too.
It's in the cards. Like, if they have three or four losses on their schedule for Tennessee, and then Vanderbilt ends up beating them, does that devalue Vanderbilt's win against Tennessee?
Say that one more time.
So say if Tennessee, sorry, I'm talking a little.
No, you're good. You're good.
If Tennessee has three or four losses on their schedule going into, you know, take on Vanderbilt at Neyland Stadium, and Vanderbilt ends up beating Tennessee, does that devalue any of Vanderbilt's case for a playoff spot?
Maybe a little bit, but I mean, I'd still consider it a good win because it's on the road, and from top to bottom, the SEC has been very competitive. Even Kentucky has been competitive with teams like Texas, took them to overtime, beat Auburn this past week, and so maybe a little bit, but Tennessee still has the number one offense in the SEC, so they're going to look at that. They still have a pretty good defensive line that's been able to get after the quarterback. So it may be a little bit to answer your question, but it still should mean something.
Absolutely. We'll get to more of your calls and texts, talking college football, playoff implications. If Vanderbilt, if they went out, is there still a true case that they can make the playoff? We'll get into that even more on Next Man Up, 102.5 The Game. Great song here, right? I love it. Outkast, Miss Jackson, can't go wrong with that. Back here on Next Man Up, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly, Brandon Bigsby, talking about college football playoff. If Vanderbilt has the strength of schedule to get into the playoff, if they end up going 10-2 the rest of the way out, that's just something to keep your eyes and ears on. But Parker, we were talking about during the break, Tennessee. There's some little rumors, murmurs that maybe, you know, I wouldn't say rumors, but definitely some murmurs of Tennessee fans wanting Heupel to be gone.
I'm going to shut it down right here.
Yeah.
Shut it down. Shut down the rumors. Here's the deal. When you lost Nico in the spring, nonetheless, you lost Nico in the spring, and you go out and you get whatever is left over at the quarterback position, basically the top of the trash heap. And I'm not saying Joey Aguilar has been that. He's been solid, but he was a turnover-prone quarterback at a Group of Five school. A lot of Tennessee fans were saying, hey, maybe Heupel and this team deserves a pass. Now, Heupel didn't believe that, but fans were we're allowing this to be a grace period, and we all thought realistic expectations for this team going in were 7-5, 8-4, and that's where I had Tennessee at 8-4, and that's playing out pretty accordingly. Now that Tennessee looked better than expected, people raised their unrealistic expectations for this team. And now when Tennessee loses a game to Oklahoma and the offense shot themselves in the foot several times, now people are calling for Heupel's job. But here's the thing. Where was Tennessee before Josh Heupel? Where was Tennessee under Derek Dooley? Where was Tennessee under Butch Jones? The bottom of the barrel. I mean, it cannot get worse. Josh Heupel has two 10-win seasons, brought you to the college football playoff, won an Orange Bowl, had a borderline Heisman contender quarterback. He's brought Tennessee back to relevancy. And now people are calling for his job. I can't understand it. Now, Josh Heupel has his – in the offense, they have some problems, but it's stupid. It's so stupid.
Yeah, I look at this – again, it falls under my microwave society category. Vols fans just have to be patient. The ones that are on the get Josh Heupel out of here train. Like, you got to just be patient a little bit. Everybody knew, and you even mentioned this in the break, everyone knew that, you know, having a quarterback that's not adjusted to the Heupel system, you're getting rid of Nico, you're moving on from that, turning the page. You just got to give it a little time. And obviously, Vols fans don't want to hear that because they want to be in, you know, the college football playoff contention every single year. And I think that's just something that frustrates them. And also, too, if Vandy waltzes into Neyland Stadium and takes care of business, Vols fans will be irate that they did not beat Vanderbilt, because for the last, I don't know, decade or so, it seems like Vanderbilt's been the little brother to Tennessee, but those roles have been reversed now. Obviously, Diego Pavia has hyped up this Vanderbilt team, and they're backing it up, especially he's been on multiple podcasts here in the area and also on even our airwaves on Chase McJoy. Even mentioned that, you know, this is a team that's looking to win a national championship, and they want to run Tennessee, like, not Tennessee Vols, but run the state. And that just, it goes to show you the confidence, and I guess you could say aura is what everybody says nowadays, that this is a Vanderbilt team that can do that. So I know I just morphed from Tennessee to Vandy, but back to Vandy here for a second. This is a game, again, it's a couple weeks down the line, but if Vandy takes care of business against Auburn and Kentucky, which I do think they can take care of business against Kentucky, unless they have one of those little trap games, as some may call it, that's something you have to worry about. But I see a route for Vanderbilt to get into the playoff at 10-2. I just do. I don't care what anybody says. If there's a one-loss ACC team out there that, you know, may have a stronger case, what's the top 25 strength of schedule right there? I'm sure they only have one or two top 25 games, whereas Vanderbilt has, what, five on their schedule? Five or six, something like that? That, to me, that's a lot more difficult to take out of the equation than to put in.
I want to make just one quick note on Tennessee, then I promise I'm going to go right back to Vanderbilt.
Sure.
But with Tennessee, there's a hope that you're bringing in the number one overall quarterback recruit in Vaison Brandon. You're bringing in a five-star receiver. Think about in 2 years, Tristan Keyes is the five-star receiver. Think about in 2 years when he's a sophomore. And then hopefully, if things play out according to plan, Mike Matthews, former five-star receiver, is a senior. Braylon Staley, also a senior, both of which are top six in receiving yards in the SEC. Think about the continuity that you can have on offense. That should give you hope. Just thinking about that right there. Now back to Vanderbilt. Yeah, Auburn, Kentucky, both at home, and then on the road at Tennessee. Don't quote me on this. I'm going to look it up at the break. But I believe Vanderbilt has a top 20 strength of schedule based on who they've played so far. And if that factors into the playoff and you win out, they should be in. Simple as that.
Right. Well, I talked about in the break that we get your phones and texts right here. Edward, what do you got for us here on college football?
Hey, guys. Enjoy your show. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
We got you, Edward.
Let's get some comments about the University of Tennessee football. I'm probably going to get some death threats and somebody want to come beat me up, Tennessee fan. Tennessee fans on the outside looking in. They want to get rid of Johnny Majors. Couldn't wait to get rid of him. Wanted to get rid of Bill Battle. Coach Fulmer. How'd all this work out for him? What did he go for about a 20-year stretch? Tennessee's fan, as one of you gentlemen just said, their expectations are too high. They believe that they can run with historically national champion repeat, multiple, Alabama, Notre Dame, Oklahoma, Nebraska, upstate Florida, and Georgia's. That's their upper mid level. Okay, that's my opinion. Tennessee fans' expectations were way too high, and I just. The second thing I want to ask you: do you think Diego Pavia? And I'm not a huge Vanderbilt fan. I don't want to say what kind of fan I am right now, what university, because they are terrible. But do you think Diego Pavia will get an invite to New York to be considered for the Heisman? I hope he does. I think that Indiana quarterback will get it. But I know one of you guys is a big UT fan. I just want to get your thoughts about what I've said about their expectations. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Edward, for the call. He makes a great point about Diego Pavia. Does he deserve a case to go to New York and be one of the Heisman candidates? I'd say yes before this Texas game. After the Texas game, I don't know. I mean, sure, they brought it within 3 points at the end of the game. They were one onside kick away from really kind of maybe turning the game around. You know, I mean, it's a tough one to dictate for sure. I'd probably lean no just after that Texas game. I'm sure one loss doesn't really dictate things here or there, but, you know, when you lose to Alabama and you lose to Texas, two teams last year where you were in a dogfight with, obviously you beat Alabama last year here in Nashville, and then you almost beat Texas as well last year here. It just seems like those two teams really have the complete, I don't know, defensive roster structure going up against a guy like Diego Pavia. So to say Diego Pavia is a Heisman candidate, he still is, but I'd say he's on the outside looking in just by a player or two, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'd say before the Texas game, and Diego Pavia played very well in the second half. Outside of the fumble, he threw for over 360 yards. First time he's thrown for over 200 yards versus an SEC opponent this year. The loss is going to play into it, and I think there are guys that have leapfrogged. Julian Sain is one of those guys.
Right.
The way he played on Saturday, my goodness. It was very, very impressive versus Penn State. Mendoza is going to be in there. Ty Simpson's going to be there. I think Marcel Reed has leapfrogged Diego Pavia. So Diego Pavia is certainly still going to be in the conversation based on the fact that he's been able to elevate everybody around him. But for right now, I still think he's on the outside looking in.
When is the Heisman Trophy cutoff date for players to go to, let's see, New York?
It's
early December.
It's December 13th is the ceremony.
Right. But I'm trying to figure out the cutoff date. Because, like, I don't know if it plays a factor into the college football playoff at all. But if Vanderbilt finds their way into the college football playoff as one of the last remaining seeds, I think you can put Diego Pavia in as a Heisman candidate to go to New York. I think that's something that plays a factor into it. There's obviously TV ratings and stuff that fall into this as well, but I don't know. There's something about that. If that is a case, if my timetable kind of matches up here and Vandy is a college football playoff team, I could see Pavia in New York for sure.
Yeah, I think they'd have to win out because wins are one of the things that factor into the Heisman Trophy voters. And there have only been, I think, three quarterbacks with three losses that have won it: Tim Tebow, RG3, and Lamar. So I don't think Diego Pavia is in that category. But if he wins out and he has several opportunities to prove it, Auburn, Kentucky, Tennessee, if they win out and his numbers are good, I'd give him an invite, yeah.
So let's go back real quick to Texas A&M of 2012, because that was the year Johnny Manziel won the Heisman. Let's see, Texas A&M football of 2012. Did they not have two losses on their schedule that year, or was it just one loss?
I believe two losses in the regular season, and I can't remember if they won the bowl game or not. I think they did lose the bowl game in the Sugar Bowl.
Yeah, it was. They went 11-2.
Was it to Oklahoma?
I believe so, if my computer would not, you know, freeze on me here. Well, all I know is that they went 11-2. It does look like they did lose in the bowl game. That was the Sugar Bowl. I can't see on my screen here that who the away team was, but that still goes to show you a two-loss team, Heisman winner. Again, at the time, Johnny Manziel was doing a bunch of crazy stuff that year. Obviously, that Alabama win is what really put him over the top. But again, you look at Pavia, what are those statement games for him in his Heisman candidacy? And I'd say the LSU game as of late, recently. I mean, take him out of the equation of that game, I don't think Vanderbilt gets the job done. He managed the clock well that game. I think that one touchdown inside the red zone over there by the student section, that was one of those, I'd say, Heisman plays. I mean, obviously it wasn't pretty, but, and again, the whole conversation of, oh, his stats don't really compare to everybody else, yeah, whatever. He's a difference maker. He really is.
Yeah, he plays within the structure of what Vanderbilt is asking him to do, and that's what a casual fan who watches Vanderbilt doesn't understand. He plays within structure, and then what he's able to do out of structure is just impressive, and he elevates everybody around him. The fact that we're even talking about Vanderbilt in this light, it goes to show you how much of a difference maker he is. His stats aren't up there with the Julian Sains of the world, the Fernando Mendozas, the Ty Simpsons, but when we're talking about the Heisman Trophy, and we're talking about the most valuable player to their team, Diego Pavia is certainly in that top 6, 7, 8 conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And getting to Jeremy and Clarksville on the text line, do we factor in last year's Alabama-Texas were home games? I think if Vandy played Texas in Nashville this year, Vandy would have won. Texas is not as good as they are in their home state of Texas. So that makes a good point. Talking about just in general, if, you know, Vandy were to beat Texas here, I think there would have been a little bit of a factor in that. We'll get to more of your calls and text on the other side. Talking about just Diego Pavia's candidacy for Heisman. I think that's a really good conversation to have right now because we're getting down to the nitty-gritty of college football.
Getting down to it, baby.
Indeed. Right here on Next Man Up, 102.5 The Game. Back here on Next Man Up, 102.5 The Game, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly, and Brandon Bigsby. Running some hot chili peppers. Love that.
Man. Spinning it back there, Brandon. Good job.
The variety today, all over the place. Definitely what I was expecting, right? A little variety action, especially here on the show. Kind of continuing with Diego Pavia's candidacy of Heisman. I mean, looking at some other candidates, Parker, who would you say minus Diego Pavia? We kind of talked about it in the last segment, but you mentioned Trinidad Chambliss, the quarterback at Ole Miss. What intrigued you so much about him over at Diego Pavia?
The fact that he came from a Division II school was thrust into action right away with the Austin Simmons injury, and he has been lights out. The number of games in which he's had a rushing and passing touchdown is up there with Johnny Manziel and Tim Tebow, and he's done that again. I think this was really interesting. They talked about this ahead of the Georgia game, but the highest crowd attendance that he played in at Division II Ferris State was 16,000. That's the highest number of attendance. And then that game at Georgia, there was 90-plus, and he still played lights out. So Trinidad Chambliss has to at least be in the conversation. He, in my mind right now, he's not a finalist. I think my finalist would be Sain, Mendoza, and Simpson, but he's certainly in the conversation.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, if we're trying to really compare stats for the most part, obviously Sain has, what, roughly 2,100 yards, give or take, passing. I mean, you look at Sain, Mendoza, and Simpson, they all have over 2,000 yards passing, and probably a little bit over Diego Pavia. Diego Pavia has 2,000 and shy of, or I'd say he's 2,000, shy of 2,100, 18 touchdowns, 5 interceptions on the season. So those are some pretty good stats. I mean, you look at Alabama's Ty Simpson, who has 20 touchdowns on the season with 1 interception. Discount the Florida State game for him. I think he's really made a huge comeback for the Alabama Crimson Tide, especially for his Heisman hopeful.
That was such an outlier, too, because at that point in time, we didn't know what Florida State was. But that was Ty Simpson's very first game as a starter. It was on the road. Tallahassee's not exactly the easiest place to play. But that game, since that point, as Alabama's proven that game was such an outlier because they beat 4 straight ranked opponents, and they've been throwing teams in the wood chipper since that point. Now, the South Carolina game was pretty close, but Alabama's played very well, and Ty Simpson is a legit possibility of being the first quarterback selected in the draft. So, yeah, that game is just a complete outlier.
And you mentioned a name that kind of raised my eyebrow a little bit, a guy that's from Nashville, Marcel Reed with Texas A&M. Obviously, a team that's undefeated at 8-0, could definitely go undefeated the rest of the way for their regular season, being the SEC championship game. But if we're trying to, I'm not saying trying to compare stats, but there are people out there that are trying to discredit Diego Pavia's, you know, outlook on being a Heisman candidate. The guy has 2,000 yards throwing, I mean, the ball. I mean, you look at a guy like Marcel Reed, who is a dual-threat quarterback that can hurt you with his feet and arm, has 1,900 yards, give or take, passing with 17 touchdowns and 6 interceptions. Pavia, 18 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, 1 less interception. Obviously, the passing touchdowns, give or take, is off by 1 or 2. Those are tight numbers. So the fact that people keep trying to discredit Pavia's Heisman hopeful candidacy, to me, is ludicrous.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%, because it's not all just about stats. Now, obviously, stats are going to be very important, but also what they're able to do on the teams that they're on, how they elevate these guys. Marcel Reed is another one who, out of NBA, the talent was there. I personally questioned how he would look as a passer this year, and I had been proven wrong. And I'm happy because I like Marcel Reed, but he's looked pretty solid as a passer this year, completing over 60% of his passes, close to 2,000 yards, 17 touchdowns, and then the ground game as well, over 5.5 yards per carry. So he's one of those guys that is going to at least be in the mix, but as of right now, I wouldn't have him as a finalist.
And a guy that has put together a quiet resume. I mean, obviously, Ohio State is one of those teams where they're expected to win week in and week out, but nobody's really talking about Ohio State, and or do you see it on the headlines on ESPN or whatever. But Julian Sayin, a quarterback that has 23 touchdowns, 3 interceptions on the season. This past week against Penn State, he was 20 for 23, 316 yards and 4 touchdowns. I mean, that is what you want to call a Heisman game right there.
Jeez, 80% of his passes as a freshman, or as a sophomore technically. But I've heard a lot of people say this, that he has aliens on the outside, and Carnell Tate and Jeremiah Smith, obviously, and who wouldn't want to throw to those guys? Like, they make your job pretty easy, and the fact that Ohio State doesn't have as tough of a strength of schedule as some of these other teams, but you also have to put the ball in a good position for these guys to look as good as they do, and he's completing 80% of his passes. And that is incredible. So Julian Sayin has certainly earned the right to be at this point in time in the finalist conversation. But I've heard too many people saying, oh, look who he has thrown to. He doesn't have the type of pressure. Well, he's looked really good. He's looked very, very good. And I was one of those guys that wasn't ready to say he deserved to be a finalist, but I'm getting to that point now.
What about another team in the Big Ten in Indiana, Fernando Mendoza, a guy that I think, in my opinion, if he were to be a Heisman winner, he has a true case for it because of the performance they had against Oregon on the road. I mean, it's not easy to go on the road across the country to play in Eugene, Oregon and win. I mean, obviously their run game was really good that game, obviously, and they took care of business with the clock. But that all comes down to the quarterback, the technician of that team. He has 2,100 yards plus passing on the year, 25 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. I mean, last week he was 14 for 21 with 201 in the air, 2 touchdowns, 1 rushing, 1, you know, in the air. Had 1 interception, going to discredit that a little bit maybe. But still, 4 interceptions on the year. You got to say this Indiana team, even though they may not go deep in the postseason, they're still taking care of business in the regular season.
Again, you got to look at what he's done. Indiana was a good team last year, but we saw when they faced up against legitimate competition, they didn't look as strong. Well, this Indiana team is different this year, and a big, big reason why is because of Fernando Mendoza. I mean, we're talking about Indiana, not in basketball, not in baseball, but in football as a legit national championship contender. Have you ever done that in your life before? Because I certainly haven't.
No.
And a big reason for that is Fernando Mendoza. So if we're going to talk about Diego Pavia elevating the teammates that he has, elevating Vanderbilt to be in the spotlight, well, Fernando Mendoza has done that at Indiana. Indiana is a traditional basketball school, blue blood, through and through. We've never talked about them in football like we have the last couple of years. But he has Indiana playing legit national championship-level football. So, and he has the numbers to back it up.
Again, the numbers are not too far off from a Diego Pavia comparing them to Fernando Mendoza. I mean, I think Julian Sayin's in a different category for the most part with Ohio State. But minus that, all the other 3-4 candidates, I think Pavia's in the mix for all that, to be honest with you. This is a guy that, again, is a X factor to the Vanderbilt offense. Without him in the offense, I wouldn't say they're not anything, but they're definitely not to the caliber they are currently.
100%. And that's That's why it's kind of like the MVP conversation in the NFL. Who is able to – who's most valuable to their team and who's able to elevate everybody around them? That was why Josh Allen, I believe, won it last year over Lamar Jackson, because he didn't have the receivers around him that, you know, these guys like Patrick Mahomes and, you know, Joe Burrow, who they had, but they were able to win at a high level with Khalil Shakir as their wide receiver one. So that has to factor in the same conversation when we're talking about the Heisman Trophy.
Absolutely. And Parker, there was a texter that texted in earlier about, well, why are you not talking about a certain team in Nashville? We'll get to that on the other side, don't worry. But we'll get some text before we cut to the break. Nevada Josh says, I know the Heisman is a quarterback trophy, though. So, like, you make a good point about the MVP voting. It has turned into a little bit of a MVP for a quarterback trophy in some aspects.
Yeah, and I'm saying that as a quarterback, like as a former quarterback, I'm admitting it is a quarterback award, because I think Jeremiah Love, if it wasn't, Jeremiah Love could certainly be in the conversation, what he's been able to do. Obviously, Jeremiah Smith is going to be there. But Reuben Bain, to me, is one of the better players that I've watched in college football this year, and he plays defensive tackle. So he's not going to get the same love. He's just because of the position he plays. But if we're truly talking about the best player in college football, Reuben Bain, to me, is one of the best, if not the best. And that's why I was happy that Travis Hunter won it last year.
Right.
You have a guy who played both sides of the ball. To me, he was the best player. So I think that kind of helps with the narrative that it's a quarterback award, but for the most part, it has been mostly quarterbacks.
Absolutely. Hey, there's a team, minus the Tennessee Titans, Vanderbilt Commodores, and Tennessee Vols, and whatever professional/college team that did not win this weekend. Well, guess who did? A team down the road at Geodis Park, Nashville SC. We'll talk about that at the start of the final hour of Next Man Up right here on 102.5 The Game.